peace of mind.
This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 in association with bizradio.co.uk on this Tuesday, the 8th of October, with me, Paul Andrews, and my co-host, the absolutely gorgeous Bird on a Bike.
Thank you very much.
That's all right.
You're right. Are you feeling after that wedding talk?
I've been gifted. I have.
Yes, you have.
Yeah. It's an industry that amazes me. I'm staggered by the numbers. And
And the funny thing is I'm reading a book at the minute, and it's called If You're in My Office, It's Too Late. And it's by a divorce lawyer.
Right.
And he talks about, actually, he does the opposite. It's how to stay together.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating listening to him talk about. And I'm reading it in bed, and I'm going, Stephen, oh, my God. And he's like, I disagree with that completely. You know, he's like in a totally different space to it. Mm. But it's just interesting listening to the statistics. One of the business and then two of the community and life and what goes with a wedding and the gender difference as well. Yeah. So to watch the women, like, so we had the dress came through at 1,385. So these will settle. Told me average cost is 1,385, which of a dress, I don't know what to say about it.
I thought it'd be more than that.
Yeah, me too. And then we were just talking outside, weren't we? And I was saying to Paul, I was saying, look, what is it that you actually do?
Mm. And I said, venue styling.
Venue styling, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, exactly. Just coming back to wedding dresses, though, because where we used to be with a radio station down in Dymchurch, next door to us was a wedding dress shop.
Yeah.
But they were secondhand. And they did a roaring trade. Yeah.
I mean, you only wear it once. Why would you spend...
Look at Bird's face, look.
Yeah.
I know, right? I've got a funny story of what I did with my first wedding dress.
I hate to think.
I tried to sell it at boot fair for 25 quid and it was worth 800 quid and nobody bought it.
Right.
I only wore it once. Do you know what I mean?
If only you'd have known, though.
Well,
you could have worn it a few more times.
I look like a meringue. I did have a meringue.
I had mine made into my daughter's christening gown.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Shane. Yeah, okay.
I didn't keep
my daughter was already born.
So it's an interesting industry. And I don't understand, one, why it's not moving forward, but I get it's to do with the rituals and what people want.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating what you were saying about how you get locked in and monopolised with the venue. That's fascinating
also,
to me.
Even talking around this table, it's very emotive. Mm. You all have views and different views
on what
a wedding should cost. Some people think it should cost £1,000. Other people would be happy to spend £50,000 on it. Mm. And it's very emotive.
Yeah.
How much of that do you think is keeping up with somebody else's wedding? What someone else has done before?
I couldn't possibly comment.
I would have thought all of it is.
A lot of it, yeah. I mean,
it's trend-setting. It's what's on trend. It's how much you should spend now. It's where do you get your dress from? It's what venue do you go to? It's what who pays now? That's, you know, an interesting...
It's like as a company, and I'm sorry it's on meeting in, our rustic table is very unique because we design that table and we manufacture quite a lot of the different elements on that table as well. And that, but someone is going to copy that.
Mm.
And flattery is the biggest form.
Compliment.
Yeah, compliment. So someone will copy that. But at the moment it's unique. And then we need to come up with something else.
Mm. Absolutely. Cool. Listen, I've had a tweet from the lovely Andrea Starbuck. And she says, great show, Business Bunker. This is work-life week as well. It's always something, isn't it? We're 10 things, because it's also National Mental Health Awareness Week and it's National Construction Week. Anyway, it's also work-life week. And just to remind listeners, we will be hosting Flexible and Proud webinar this Thursday between 1 and 2. You can get into it by going to flexisense.biz. Flexisense, FlexiSense.biz, flexisense.biz, and they're going to be talking to Sleeping Giant Media about flexible working in a digital age. So do join their webinar this Thursday.
Cool.
What you got, Bird?
I have got, join us for the Kenwood Trust James Bond-themed fireworks spectacular featuring a performance from Marylebone Jelly. It is an event not to be missed. And that's on Thursday, the 7th of November. And that's from 4:30 in the afternoon, which is really sad because then you know it's going to be dark nights, don't you? 4:30 in the afternoon till 8:30 in the evening. Gates open at 4:30. Fireworks start at 7:30 and the event finishes at 8:30. And that's Kenwood Place, Kenwood Road in Yalding.
Yep.
www.worldwideweb.eventbrite.co.uk and then put annual fireworks spectacular.
I'll be there, obviously. I'm a trustee at Kenwood Trust. I'll be there. And just a heads up, if you're bringing young kids, you don't have to get there at 4 o'clock, because by the time the fireworks are on, they've had enough.
Yes, you're right.
There is other things to do. Don't get me wrong. There's rides and things to do, but don't get there too early. The doors open so they can start parking cars. But if you've got young kids, I suggest you wait a little while before you get there.
Can I give you a tip about sparklers with young children?
Put
them in a carrot so they don't hold a hot end of the sparkler.
Ah, that's a good one.
I saw that on Facebook the other day.
Ah, yeah. Like it.
That's the only helpful hint.
Stick your sparkler in a carrot. Carrot, there you go. Yeah, top tips. Top tips from Cheryl. Fantastic.
For me as well, won't you?
Yeah. I've also had a tweet from Dan Marsden. We're tuned into the Business Bunker show this afternoon. Any Kent business owners and their teams that want to learn how to use LinkedIn properly to bring them customers, I'd be delighted to help. If you want to find out more, check my profile. And his profile is, his Twitter handle is Major Cow Pie. And that's
you
Dan
Marsden.
You
love Twitter handles like that, don't you?
I do. They're my favourites. Terry Botfield, TD Botty.
Interesting, yeah. Dan's put that up because you got the likes of Gary Vaynerchuk absolutely selling LinkedIn at the minute, like massive. That a lot of business is being done on LinkedIn. And are you optimising your profile? That's the key. I'm just about to revamp all mine again. We need to continually do it. Why are you doing that face?
LinkedIn and me just don't get on. I've got 7,000 connections on LinkedIn, and I get nothing.
What do you do on
there? No, but hold on a minute. I get continually spammed.
Yeah.
43,000 times a day by people that have not read my profile, and it drives me nuts. You know, people trying to sell me things. I do. Yeah. Like, do you want a website? What you mean? My web development agency can't develop my own website, right? Okay, fair enough.
But what are you putting out on there? What content are you releasing? Where are you grabbing your audience from?
I put the content, the blogs out that I put out on Twitter. I put out on LinkedIn.
So, therefore, one could question, Dan, please let us know. It might not be working on the same platforms because the two platforms don't work the same.
Yeah, no, different, yeah.
But again, it's where you choose to spend your time, isn't it? Twitter works really well for you. Twitter doesn't work well for me.
Well, it did work for me until I got banned, yeah. Seven Oaks Chamber have tweeted, there's a bag puss fun run on Sunday afternoon on behalf of the Hospices of Hope. So they're raising money for the Hospices of Hope. So Seven Oaks Chamber, that's the number Seven Oaks Chamber. Give them a follow on Twitter. Find out about the bag puss fun run this Sunday.
So interesting with these fun runs. We had there was Folkestone Half Marathon the other week, and then there was Ashford Half Marathon 10K. It's always in the worst of weathers. I've got a race in 2 weeks' time. It will be the worst weather ever. Anyway.
Cool. Lisa Bowman, I've got millions of tweets today.
I haven't got anything coming through on my Twitter.
They've all got hashtag to be bunker.
Nothing.
Lisa Beaumont Marketing, Rustle, grab a slot while you can for the next clinic on the 22nd of October to help your business grow, taking place at the Daily Bread TN4. To find out more, lisabeaumontmarketing.co.uk.
Nice.
Check it out.
Vanilla Webb, Burden of Bike High. Could we have a shout out for our school's affiliate program, please? And this is it menowap.com posts for more information, helping schools fill the funding gaps while helping small businesses. Love that. So, yes, thanks. You are welcome. And that's me now. So that's me now, Co.
Having a great show, Vanilla Webb. Want to tell you about the Icedium Group meet and greet this Sunday. Give them a follow for more details. That's Icedium Group. That's Icedium_group. And I think, looking at it, that they're a cryptocurrency organisation, and they've got a meet-up this Sunday.
Apparently, don't talk to me about crypto.
Have you lost?
Have you? I haven't lost because I haven't sold, but have you seen it's in the depths of despair at the minute? Yeah. I was millionaire a week ago.
3 weeks ago, she's going, yes, 200,000% up.
I love the stock.
But you didn't.
I love the market.
But you didn't sell before the top of the market, did you?
No, I didn't sell. But it's very interesting. I know a couple of things that are happening where people are still thinking about putting their currency in crypto. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, just a bit of non-financial tip in here. If you're doing something like that to speculate to make money, you have to sell before the market peaks. Yeah, you have to sell before the market peaks. You don't wait for it to peak.
But here's the problem with it, and when you've got a marketplace that is so young and very, very volatile, I mean ridiculously volatile, you can't predict at the minute where the peaks are. So what you've got to do is you've got to sell at a profit and always be happy with a profit.
Exactly.
That's what you've got to do.
Don't be greedy.
Yeah.
It's like people backing horses and stuff like that. They have a couple of winners and they throw it all on the next one because they don't want to stop. Whereas a professional gambler will highlight how much they can win or lose in a week and stop no matter which
profit.
Way they're going.
Yeah.
And that's the only way you can survive. Yeah. Absolutely. Cool. Do you know what?
I think we should.
I think we should too.
Yeah.
We were going to speak to our guests, but we're not going to now. We're going to go home. Oh, no, sorry. That's not what you meant. Right. No. We're going to talk to our next guests, aren't we?
We are.
We are.
I'm quite excited to hear about them, actually.
Are you?
Well, because I saw them in a different venue.
Did you?
Yeah.
Would that be the one that you're famous for?
No.
An altogether different venue? Because you saw them at the summit, Kent Business School Summit at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. Did I? No.
Did you
I
not
didn't.
See them? They were there. They were there, weren't you? You were there.
I was there too.
And she was there too. She's on the cover of the report. Yeah.
Being stupid. Anyway, carry on.
Anyway, let's introduce these two lovely ladies. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show for the very first time, Ella and Cheryl. Well, welcome to the show. I don't mind who goes first, or you can both talk at the same time, or one at a time, whatever. Tell us a little bit about each of you and what you do, and then we'll kind of broaden it from there.
We're looking at each other now.
Yeah. Go on. You go ahead, Ella. Go on.
Hello, Paul. So I'm Ella Brocklebank. I'm the business development manager for Jenna. We're main contractors based down in Folkestone. Mm. That's the day job, so to speak. There's a number of other hats that I wear in terms of co-chairing the KCFG, which is the Kent Construction Focus Group, linked to the Kent Invicta Chamber of Commerce. Mm. I co-chair that with Cheryl, and also a trustee of a charity as well. So donations.
And which charity is that?
Donations with a Difference.
Right, okay.
So we've been going for nearly 5 years. We're going to be celebrating our fifth birthday later this year. Cheryl and I got involved about 18 months, 2 years ago. Mm. And it was a bit of an accident, really. We kind of moaned to the trustees at the time that they didn't have any females on their board. And that was obviously, are you up for it then? So,
yeah.
And I think we've come in and made quite a bit of difference, really, and raised quite a large amount of money
Fantastic.
For the charity.
Well, we'll look at all of that. Let's just hear quickly from Cheryl.
Well, my name is Cheryl Corsbrook. I am the business development manager for Quigg Goldens. They're construction lawyers. I've been in the industry for over 30 years. I started off as a surveyor, moved into business development, and with Ella co-chair the KCFG group. I chair Constructing Excellence, which is a national club, and we're the Kent Club, and host a networking on a last Friday of the month in Canterbury at the Miller's Arms, building Kent Connections.
Okay. Cool. So let's start with this. Both you ladies work in construction.
Indeed.
Which is still unusual, sadly, because construction is still an industry that doesn't have enough female workers in it. In truth be known, it doesn't have enough workers in it.
Nothing,
yeah. And maybe we can look at that just for a moment. The construction industry, in the UK at the moment, there's 812,000 unfilled jobs, and 37% of them are in construction. The construction industry is suffering a skill shortage. Have you any views on that? You know, where you
don't
know.
Get started. Don't get started. Your program won't be long enough. For us, the skill shortage starts in school, and it's from primary school. Who tells children that they can't play with Lego anymore or don't want to do Minecraft? basically for us, although we're firm advocates of women in construction, it's about getting kids into construction, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So although we have women in construction groups that we host and chair, we would much rather be talking to everybody.
Just get everybody in construction.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Everyone into construction. Because you don't have a men in construction group.
Yeah.
I think it's perception, though, Paul. In all honesty, yeah, I think the construction industry is just—it's just negatively perceived. It's kind of a dirty jobs and perceived as an industry. Well, if you drop out of school, you can go out and work on a building site, and it's trying to change that perception. And I think a couple of years—I mean, a long time ago—now wrote an article for one of the Chamber magazines, which was, we need to make construction sexy, really. And just actually, let's change the image of it, and hopefully that might help.
You're very right. But it's one of those sad things about a lot of industries, actually. This isn't having a go at anybody, but because young people coming into any industry have no knowledge of that industry, their perceptions can be set by the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right, Ella. When you say construction, most people immediately think of a bricklayer for some bizarre reason.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't even know if we lay bricks anymore, do we? And we've got machines that do that. But most people think of a bricklayer. But construction is a massively broad industry.
It is massive. I mean, as part of our future generations into construction with Construction Excellence a couple of years ago, we developed a pack of cards. And they looked like Top Trumps cards, and we called them Top Jobs. And we identified over 180 jobs within the industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, as you say, it's not about being a bricklayer, a carpenter, or plumber, or electrician.
Yeah.
You know, there's architects, there's surveyors, there's engineers, there's landscape designers.
Yeah.
There are hundreds of jobs that are available.
Yeah.
And it's not just the things that you think of. I mean, construction lawyers, buyers, marketeers, all of those are specific.
Land management. There's just all kinds of roles. And It's one of those industries where you can start in one place and move into different areas.
Exactly, as I've done over the years. Yeah. You know, I started out as a surveyor, quantity surveyor, and I moved within the industry between client side, contractor side, subcontractor side, then went into the business development side, had some children, so you can still have, a career as well as having children, did freelance work in that time, did tendering, did estimating, that kind of stuff. So, it's very, very flexible.
I don't want to kind of lead you off in a different direction, but it's a fascinating industry, and there are issues that need to be faced for all of us. We talk about housing crisis, but and a lot of people go, the answer to that is build more houses. Well, that's okay if you've got someone to build them.
And the money to build them as well.
And the money to build them,
not coming from government to be able to build the houses that are needed.
Yeah.
All the local authorities aren't building houses. Yeah. Things have changed in the last 30 years.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's lots of issues to face, but I'm really very interested in people coming into the industry. Yeah, and why we don't encourage more people to do it. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but this is my opinion, that we've spent the last 20 years trying to send everybody to university, and trying to discourage them from doing trades. And that's come back to bite us big time, and allied to the fact that with the B word, a lot of construction workers were coming in from overseas. And whilst the figures don't show that they've gone home yet, there's certainly not a lot of new ones coming in. So we need to urgently start to address young people coming into the industry. So for you guys in the Kent Construction Forum, which you are part of and run along with the Chamber of Commerce, what's your focus in that group? What's your main focus of the group?
Well, with the Kent Construction Focus Group, the key focus is on local people for local projects. So it's making sure that, we've got fabulous architects, engineers, contractors in this county.
Yeah.
The group was set up about 15 years ago when a number of local projects were being delivered by London-based contractors, London consultants. And, it's all about localism, really, and having that local supply chain. For us as the main contractor, our supply chain is absolutely critical to us, and that's why we treat them really well. So we need those trades coming through in our subcontractors and keep encouraging people. With apprenticeships now, it is helping. Everyone is really committed. Everyone is doing their bit, but it just still seems as if it's not quite enough. And then at the moment, we are looking at disruption, because there's so much to unsettle businesses at the moment. You mentioned the B word. There's changes in technology,
reverse VAT.
Gosh, there's so much out there that businesses have got to focus on. So then the thought of actually we've still got to bring new people through, succession planning, all of that. There's a lot to think about, really.
Also, when we talk about the trades and working with subcontractors and, you know, the bricklayers, the carpenters, what you have to realise that most managing directors of companies in their 50s now started off on the tools.
Yeah.
You know, these people are now business owners.
Yeah.
So it's when you're talking at school about not being an industry to go into, these are the people that are running the businesses that are actually building the things nowadays.
Yes.
So although, and they didn't have, get degrees, you know, they went to and learned their trade and did apprenticeships. And you touched on apprenticeships, and I'll touch on that as well.
Yeah.
I worked with the university last year on a degree apprenticeships for quantity surveying, did lots of work on it, and then the whole thing's just dropped dead.
Yeah.
So it's a real shame that it's not being pushed forward, because the businesses really want this.
Yeah.
You know, if I was to ask if I wanted someone who's got a degree or somebody who'd done an apprenticeship and been learning, I'd have picked up that person every time.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
And this is what people are saying as well. Yeah, so the people who've got degrees aren't being employed by businesses because they have that opinion that you have. Yeah.
It's, you know, and changing all these perceptions is the thing that that we urgently need to do. But it's more than that, isn't it? It's getting people to understand what it's like to go and work in an industry and what the opportunities are. I call it the evolution of an industry. You know, the thing is, with any industry, you start at the bottom. No matter what qualifications you got, when you arrive for your first day on the job, you know nothing. Yeah, everything you know is a theory. None of it's a practice. So you have to start at the bottom and then work your way through it. And so many people don't see that as a process. They want to arrive at the finished process, and that doesn't happen.
When we go into schools and we try to talk to the children about construction, if you don't tell them it's construction before you start, you might get a bigger audience.
Yeah.
But we're saying to the teachers, come and join us on site. Come and have a look at what we do. Come and see what it's all about. It's not just about laying bricks.
Yeah. Yeah,
But you said it as well, April, that when an electrician or a plumber or a tradesperson, they need that business acumen as well, because they need to know where they are at a certain point. Because there's no good turning up to somebody's house when you haven't made an appointment, because they're not going to be in, or getting that invoice done, or getting that...
We love plumbers and their diaries. Oh, we really love plumbers and their diaries. Don't you worry about that.
Plumbers are very busy.
Yeah, exactly.
So you need a balance between that on-the-job training and also the back office and the other stuff that goes with running a business.
I wanted to talk about that as well, because another part of construction, the perceptions of construction, and this may or may not be the case, and I want to know your thoughts on it. When we think about the construction industry, we tend to think of an industry that is predominantly subcontractor based, and self-employed based. Is that still the prevalent thing, or is that changing?
I think, yes, it is. I mean, the trades, you have to be very specific from a main contractor's point of view for Ella. You couldn't employ electricians and plumbers, and there's not many main contractors that do that.
No,
you know,
absolutely.
Maybe for their maintenance divisions.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got a small team ourselves, because we take on quite a range of projects, really, and we've got those multi-trade employees within our general works team. But no, the majority.
And you're getting better value, better experience, everything with using a subcontract supply chain.
Yeah, okay.
But you talk about the trades, you know, we're also talking about the professions as well. You know, you've got architects and engineers and quantity surveyors and all of those. So but people look at construction as a dirty industry. Mm. They're all sitting in an office, so they're not dirty.
I've had arguments about this with other industries. And funnily enough, construction is one of those industries that actually leads the way, as far as I'm concerned with this. And many years ago, back in 1971, actually, a chap called Professor Charles Handy wrote a book called The Shamrock Organization, in which he predicted what we now call the gig economy, which is a bit of a misnomer. But basically what he said is people won't work for other people. They'll work for themselves and hire themselves out in projects that are put together. And if you think about the classic of that was the film industry or the music industry, where something comes together for an event. and then you take it away again. So if you're going to make a film, you don't rock up with a film company that, owns 14 cameramen and two, you know, best boys and four grips and all that. They hire them all in, put them together as a project team. And the construction industry works exactly the same way, really, doesn't it?
Exactly. I mean, last week at the Kent Construction Expo, I spoke at breakfast about collaboration.
Yeah.
And it's all about everybody working as one team. And so finding out what the client wants and bringing the person in that's at the end of the project at the beginning. Mm. Maybe take an extra couple of weeks to get yourself on site, but actually know what needs to be done. Solve those problems before you get to site because it's much cheaper to do it that way.
Yeah.
So it is about one team doing one project and doing all working together.
Yeah, and fundamental of all of it is project management. It's managing a project and all the sub parts of a project to pull it all together.
I mean, the client is the person who knows what they want. Usually.
Allegedly.
We have different views on that.
Yeah.
But basically, you know, if the end user is happy, then he'll have another building built or he'll recommend you to somebody else.
Yeah.
So it's about a team working together. Collaboration is very much at the forefront of
it. It's about relationships and that trust, really. And that's, you know, why there's a lot of contractors who are still around and there's some who unfortunately aren't. And it's about... as I say, having those relationships that they trust you to deliver and then they'll come back to you time and time again.
There's also a mass huge misperception about the construction industry making a fortune. Mm. When everybody talks about people, builders earning so much money, it's very, very mistaken.
Mm.
Main contractors are certainly not making the margins that people are talking about.
But when you're speaking there about customer service, that's the same in every industry in collaboration.
Absolutely.
It's like us, we collaborate with other event planners, other organisations, hotels, and you're building relationships and it's building those relationships so you deliver for the customer. The customer is king.
And that's one of the reasons why promoting local businesses to do it is so important, because they're not going to disappear.
Absolutely.
And be forgotten. Yeah. And Ella, you work for Jenner's, which is over 100 years old?
We are, 144. So 1875 we were established. So probably one of the longest standing now in Kent.
And a family business for a long, long time. Yeah. And you've been around and you do lots of different types of projects. So it's a fascinating industry that you guys are in.
Exciting.
I want to...
But people don't realise how exciting it is. Every project is different.
Shall I tell you something?
Oh, no.
my dad had a building company, right? He wouldn't let me join it. He said I was too stupid. Seriously.
We know some stupid people in the industry.
He said, no, we need brains in building. You can't do it.
Exactly. You do need brains in building. And again, that's another misperception.
Yeah.
You know, kids at school who are not academic are given the vocational route.
Well, do you know, I'm being deadly serious here, you know. I know people that I went to school with that you would never call academic, yeah? Not in a million years. They didn't get on with it. But then they go and get jobs working in building. And the math skills that they display in terms of measuring, sizing, quantifying what you're doing are really leading edge. But because it's not identified in that way, nobody gets freaked about it.
It's
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you just walked up to someone and gave them a protractor and a compass and went, can you work out the square root of that, please? They go, no. But if you said, you know, how many yards do I need to do that? They could do it. Do you get what
But it makes sense.
It's practical. It's a practical
sense.
Use of a skill.
Yeah.
And, you know, a mate of mine at school... my mate and I both came bottom in maths in a CSE mock exam, okay?
You're not selling yourself very well, are you?
I'm stupid. I'm perfectly happy with that. I left school when I was 14, that's why.
It makes the rest of us look good.
Yeah. But my mate, Steve, right, he was as bad as me at maths. Guess what he does now?
Something with maths.
He owns a chain of 12 bookmakers' shops. Yeah. You know, it's the difference between a practical skill and an academic skill, isn't it? And so many
needs both at the end of the day.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, but one of the things is that a lot of people react better to tangible things rather than intangible things. So if you give them something practical to do, they'll do it. Yeah, I'm interested in women in construction as well. How's that going? How are we in the industry? Are we attracting more women? Is it still as hard as it ever was?
Yes, it is. I think, you know, schools are still not showing girls that they can work in construction.
Hmm.
I don't think it's changed in the 30 years that I've been here.
Right.
You know, certainly there are more women in offices now.
Hmm.
And when they say there's 16% of women in the industry. Only 2% of those are technical. The rest are sort of administrative and working on site cleaning and things like that. So it's not.
They're not tradespeople so much.
Yeah, no, it's not a true figure, is it?
Yeah.
I think it depends where you are in the country as well. I mean, if you look in London, you'll see architects' practices. They do have a very high percentage of female.
A lot of architects' practices now, probably 50-50, I would say, probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there are, again, in London, I know of at least two companies of female plumbers, so all their plumbers are female or whatever, or all their electricians are female. That's a kind of a bit of a marketing thing, though, really, as much as anything, isn't it?
And illegal.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So for you guys, what's your main drive in what you're doing outside your day jobs, if you see what I mean?
What, with regard to the women in construction?
Everything, the construction forum, all the things that you're involved in. We'll talk about your charity again in a minute as well. All those things that you're doing, what's the driving force? What are you trying to do?
I think the key thing with women in construction is actually building confidence, and that we initially started in the group, we asked everybody what do they want from a group like that, and it was basically about building confidence, that confidence to walk into a room that is dominated with a sea of grey suits. It's just them feeling empowered and being able to, and we just kind of girls stick together. You don't like to see anyone stood on their own, so it's about pulling them into the conversation and having that mentoring role as well. We did some work around that, and actually everyone needs a mentor, and that's what we're there to do, and bring young talent forwards. They're very capable, but they just don't have that confidence yet to go out there.
And to keep them as well. So, they may come out of school and go on to college or university and do these degrees, but to keep them within the industry in the degree that they've actually trained for, because, women, they will have children, to keep them in the industry so that they can go back and work flexibly within the industry and still bring up their family. I mean, both of us have children, and we've still managed to continue with our careers as well.
Right, OK. I need to ask you this.
Go on, Alice, now.
Yeah. I'm ready.
Gird yourself.
You're a long way across the desk.
Is there still a perception that a building site is no place for a woman in terms of its behaviour, if you see what I mean? Are women still being put off of doing that kind of work because they think it's going to be a kind of sexist environment, or is that not
so? I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, we take that very seriously in terms of behaviour out on any of our sites. If anyone felt they were being mistreated, that would be very heavily frowned on. But no, I don't think so. I just don't think they realise it's an option open to them. I think, if I'm ever out on site, I'll go out regularly. I'm really welcomed onto site and never any sort of... The guys are proud to show you around their sites, and that's what we love about construction, is you've got that tangible finished product. I've heard of site managers driving out of their way to show their families their buildings. And, I just think, welcoming females onto site... I think we have changed now. We're not sort of still in the 60s.
I'm smiling.
It's very different to when I started.
I'm smiling because I remember going out with my dad, and my dad would drive, and I'd go, "Where are we going?" And he'd go, "I just wanted to go past here because we did this one last week." "Oh, I don't care what you did last week. I want to go to, we were going to football or something. I want to go to football and I want to look at the buildings you painted."
I still do that with my son. I will drive around. Oh, mummy's worked on that job and that job.
So. Yeah. My dad had a job at Buckingham Palace, gold leafing a load of rooms, and we had bloody pictures of it all over our house, all these gold leaf, and my dad would walk around, I did that, yeah, whatever. So how do we do this? How do we encourage more young people, not just women, but young people, to come into the construction industry? It's a massively important industry for us, massively important, we've got a shortage of housing.
I say to every parent listening to this today, think about the construction industry. You may think it's a dirty industry. It's all about a builder's bum and dirty boots. It really isn't. And there is actual jobs at the end of it. Kids going off into graphics and design and IT, there won't be the jobs there for your children, but the construction industry is always going to be.
But it's really interesting you say about that. Louis, my little one, he's 18. And his mate is working around the corner on a construction site. Now,
you know, it's been like, oh, he's doing this job. He's started in construction. And I've been watching that boy every day. I tell you what, I'm so proud of him because he's working so hard. And I'm like, you couldn't have got, if you'd asked me 2 years ago, would he have done that job? There is no way. The two personalities don't match. It brings out, even being, as you were saying, on the dirty side of construction, what an amazing gift to give yourself of the gift of working hard. And that's what I love about it. So I actually think we should all be, you know, there is that element of, and I love that that question that you've just asked, actually, about is the construction site a place for women? And it's a courageous question to ask, actually, because I'm sat there thinking, you know, I go out training with men. I train with men all the time. The things they say, the things they do, and it is that, you know, oh, is that women? And it's a conversation. I like having the conversations because actually you have just poked the bear and some people are not going to like that question you've just asked.
Sure.
And some people are going to go, well, actually, it's a fair point. No, I don't want to go in that environment and be spoken to like that or hear that language or be involved in the pranks or whatever. And you do you. And I that's what I loved about that
question. I've seen that. And I think I used to own a motor racing team. Okay. And a good friend of mine, an Argentinian lady called Valerie, who'd raced Porsches, okay, and she was good, very good. She took a car into a garage, you know, a road car, and said, I've got a problem with this. And the mechanic turned around and went, you have put petrol in it, haven't you, love? And I thought...
Well, that's the ignorance of man.
Exactly. And that... But that's a problem, isn't it? And that's really why I asked the question, because there's a perception that that can happen on building sites, or certainly did.
But
you
also,
know,
you're right as well. You are right as well. Is it a place that we want to go?
Yeah.
Do I want to be spoken to like that? Yeah. No, I'm happy to be spoken to like that because it brings out the best of me in that arena of what I'm doing. Yeah. And some people don't want to be there, and that's cool.
I'm not trying to play this up as a thing. I'm trying to make sure that we have dispelled it. Yeah, because it used to be that building sites were the absolute pinnacle of wolf whistling as well. You know,
not anymore.
But it's not, is it? No, but things have changed, haven't they? And there's, you know, if you go onto a building site now, there's rules and regulations all over the place going, you don't do this, you don't do that, you wear your hard hat, you wear your boots, you don't behave like this, you keep the site tidy, you think about the people, the residents that you're working around, you keep... There's lots of stuff now that has changed beyond all recognition.
But everything's changed in every industry. Yeah. Health and safety has changed in every industry. It's not just construction.
Yeah.
And maybe it is the perception of builders. Because, do you know, there's a lot of construction that goes on around the world all of the time.
Yeah.
So it is the builder that
I've seen some of those videos of a guy's building scaffolding out of bamboo.
And out the back of a truck.
Exactly.
But you say that. Do you remember, 2 years ago, do you remember I said to you, I got wolf whistled?
Yeah.
And it really offended one of a listener and they were very upset about it.
Yeah.
So that opinion still counts.
Yeah.
There are people that get offended
by
certain behaviour and there are people that aren't.
Yeah.
So I think it's valid.
But I think the crucial thing is that the behaviour itself has been stopped. That, you know, as much as you can stop anything.
Yeah. It's a strange one because smoking, right? I look at it as smoking. We went into Germany, and in Germany, everyone still smokes.
Yeah.
You go into pubs, clubs, there's smoke everywhere. Over here, there's only a certain mindset of people that now smoke, because most people know it's bad for them. Yeah. So it's the education. The Equality at Work Act's been in, the Disability at Work Act's been in for years, and it's just changing those mindsets and changing that way of thinking.
Yeah, and but also, because with something like smoking in this country, it's now those that do smoke are now complete pariahs in society.
Alienated, aren't
they?
They're
completely alienated and sidelined and
that's like
frowned
the person
upon.
That wolf whistles.
Yeah.
Years ago in the '70s, that was acceptable.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's not just frowned upon. It's wrong. You can't do it anymore.
Exactly. And I think that's the point that we're trying to make, is that things have changed.
Yeah.
But our perceptions haven't necessarily changed with it to go with that. But it's interesting, isn't it? Again, you know, how, just from my own perspective, my eldest son, it was very academic, and he went to university and he got a degree in geophysics, okay? And he was working for me, and we got some quotes to refurbish a building, and they were eye-watering. And he went, I could do that. I went, nah, Jamie, I don't think so. And he went, nah, I could. And he did. He completely refurbished my building on his own by watching YouTube videos. And he now lives in France, where he's rebuilding a chateau himself. And he absolutely adores building things. Yeah, whereas...
And a massive sense of achievement of finishing something, of completing a project, and, walking around a project at the end. It is really, really satisfying.
But it's a real eye-opener, because he was so academic and so smart and so...
And he still is.
And he still is, obviously, but, you know...
But think it's in the construction industry, you don't see him as academic and smart, but yeah, no, they have
but,
to be.
But the thing that really upsets me about this is that he had all these skills and all this... desire that he didn't know he had either, to do things and make things and build things, and it was never found, you know. And he was always lauded at school about being really clever, but nobody ever sat and thought, well, okay, so you're clever, but what do you actually enjoy doing? He's a musician as well, but I mean, he does crazy things. He's just made his own bath. He sent me a picture of the week. I just made a bath. Why don't you just go and buy one in Merlin's? He lives in France. Why don't you just go and buy one? No, I found a YouTube video on how to make baths, so I'm out of baths. And he's just made windows. And he bought himself a turning machine, and he's made all these window frames, and they're absolutely stunning.
You have to give me his number. I've just bought a place in France.
Well, you'll need it, because the building industry over there isn't available. So you'd make a living.
But Paul, it just touches on your point, really. I think it basically comes down to attitude, and if you're determined to succeed, then you're going to, aren't you?
But what interests me so, and this isn't me, you know, I'm the worst at DIY, and I'm all fingers and thumbs. I'm not someone that can do anything like that, but I have tremendous respect for people that can. But the sense of satisfaction of being able to do something like that is enormous, I think. You know, to say, look, I created this, I think that's brilliant. Listen, ladies, this has been a fascinating discussion. We love what you do, and I want you just to touch on a little bit before we end up the show. We've only got 10 minutes left to go. About the charity that you're involved in, tell us something about that.
Okay, so Donations with a Difference is basically a grant making trust. So we're seven trustees now, are we?
Six trustees,
and we were set up. We're all volunteers, so every penny we raise goes to do good work locally. So we support those in Kent who need help with specialist NHS equipment that the NHS won't fund, specialist medical equipment. So a perfect example was a young boy called Curtis, and that actually links into construction, because their house was rebuilt on DIY SOS. So they're a well-known family, two guys with four adopted children, and Curtis wasn't expected to live past one. He's now eight.
Wow.
And they needed a new chair for Curtis, which basically he could control by head movements, because that's all he could do. And we raised that money for him. They needed £20,000. We had a golf day, and it raised a vast amount of money that we were able to top up and basically present them with the money to get that chair. And they said, they know he absolutely loves it, because he has a tantrum when they get him out of it. So, and that's how they...
I'm the same with my favourite chair.
But being able to help a family like that was just amazing.
Yeah, brilliant.
Just, you know, such pride in what we do. And we're so lucky, because we link it back into our jobs, really, in terms of we've got so many contacts within the wider construction industry. And, you know, we just basically utilise those.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Your CSR is massive in that, isn't it? Your corporate social responsibility is great.
One of the ones we've done this year as well is Hannah, the young girl who's 15.
Right.
And she'd never been able to leave the house on her own. And now she's 17. She goes to college now on the bus on her own. And so
fantastic.
That's really helped. But, if they look on our website, you can see all the things that we've helped.
Yeah.
That leads into us with our 5-year anniversary. We're hosting a construction ball at the Ashford International Hotel, not the train station, on the 20,
9th
of November.
Right.
And so if people are interested in tables, basically make it your Christmas party.
Okay.
So any subcontractors out there listening?
Do you need venue dressing?
For nothing.
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow, wow. That would be amazing. Thank yes, you please. So much. Thank you.
So let's make sure that everybody's heard this. And so the 29th of November
yes.
at the Ashford International Hotel yes. in Ashford is the construction ball.
It is a Kent Construction Charity Ball. Yes.
It's a charity ball.
Yes,
so anyone can come.
I
don't have to be a bricklayer. I don't have to wear my hard hat.
No, no, no.
So you could have channel radio there?
You Absolutely. Can do. We have. There'll be live music. We've got a disco. We've got lots of entertainment. There'll be prizes. There'll be an auction and a raffle as well.
Fantastic. 29th of November, we'll be there.
That's yeah. fantastic.
But you can basically so find out more about us and about the ball at a website, which is www.
World Wide Web.
DWAD.org.
DWAD.org.
Yeah, so donation of the difference, but it's...
Okay. We'll put those links on the radio website as well so that people can find them.
Do you want people to give you gifts and
raffle
things?
Raffle prizes and auction prizes. Thank you.
Is that what you want? Okay.
Yes, please.
You can find us on Twitter, so our Twitter feeds are up there as well.
What is the Twitter feed for that?
At DWAD.org.
Okay.
Or ourselves, just to Ella Brocklebank or Cheryl. I'm Construction Cheryl. On Twitter.
Your Construction CH5 on Twitter.
Construction CH5, yeah.
Took me ages to find you.
Ella set it up for me.
Yeah. I'll track you down eventually, Cheryl, don't you worry. I will find all those details and put something up on the website about it and promote it on the website because I think that's fantastic.
Collaborating in the industry, collaborating all our friends from construction and getting them all together and raise some fantastic funds for some
Brilliant.
Send us an email along this sort of thing.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you.
Fantastic. Ladies, thank you so much for that. It's absolutely brilliant.
Thank you for having us.
No, it's an absolute pleasure to see you.
It wasn't that bad, was it?
You were brilliant. You were really brilliant, yeah. we've got a few minutes left of the show. We've got loads of tweets and emails.
We have got loads of tweets. Just to follow up on Dan Marsden, he's put Vanilla Web, Burden Bike, more than happy to come to Business Bunker to talk how to do LinkedIn properly. No fluff, no jargon, and he's even put a kiss on his Twitter.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks very much. We don't get kisses very often, do we?
No, I like it. Thank you, Dan.
That's hilarious. The full report and video from the University of Kent KSB Kent Business Summit 2019 are both available to read or download here, and that's at www.kentbusinessradio.co.uk/KBS, and the poster girls are just amazing on
that. You got a picture of Bird.
Thank you.
Bird and the lovely Deb Turner on the front of that. You'll be interested in this tweet. The Business Diaries. Can we have a stonking shout-out, please, Vanilla Web? It's saved the date request for the next Business Diaries, which is back on Thursday, the 5th of December, for more storytelling from five wonderful entrepreneurs. Well, Thor and Paul.
I knew that
it's going to be a charity event, as it's the month of giving. Yeah. Ticket sales will all be donated. And then it says Business Bunker, but I don't think they're donating it to the Business Bunker. I think that's just the hashtag.
All received gratefully, thank you.
It's the subject's mind as well. All about the mind. So
is it?
That'll be interesting.
Yeah, fantastic. So you're one of the five speakers, Paul, at the Business Stories. For those that don't know, the Business Stories is fabulous. It's a fantastic thing. It happens every quarter in Medway, and there's also now one in Tunbridge Wells. I've been to all of them bar one, and you get five people telling a story from their life at work that isn't a sales story and isn't, you know, why I'm a success or anything like that.
There's a few construction stories to tell.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that it's those kind of stories. Yeah.
It's about you.
Yeah, it's about you as a person and your experiences in work and in the world and things that you've done. Well, the stories that we've heard there have ranged from the hilarious to the
tears.
Horrendous.
You
know, they've had the audience in tears of both laughter and sadness and everything in between. You've been to quite a few and you've spoken as well, haven't you, Bird? Yeah,
it does what my radio show does, and that is show the whole of somebody.
We had 4 minutes to go and she hadn't plugged it. I thought I was going to make it this week without her plugging the conversation on a Wednesday on Channel Radio
from
at 1 o'clock.
Till 2.
Yeah.
Surprised she has the time.
Yeah.
Reading a book.
Writing
a book.
I know. It's amazing.
I've also had a tweet from Collier Ferguson. They say, we'd love a Business Bunker shout out for our forthcoming Collier Ferguson 50th anniversary charity awards. on the 7th of November. It's a fantastic opportunity to recognise and reward some of Kent's most outstanding charities and community groups. And I happen to know, because I saw the tweet earlier, but I haven't got it here, that the Romney Resource Centre are one of those charities that have been nominated for the Ferguson Collier Award. Blimey, we got loads still. What you got, Bert?
Can I just quickly, I'm going to just summarise it quickly. So it's Help Bridge the Gap Between Schools and Businesses, exactly following on from what we were talking about. So this is Skills 3030. The programme is this. For business, it's a one-hour networking. We've got Paul Andrews doing skills employment. For students, we've got a one-hour workshop. We bring both of them together, business and students, for 40 minutes facilitated networking, 10 minutes free networking. It is where the magic happens. These events are held with the FSB Kent in association with jobsinkent.com. And the next one is the 20th of November at Longfield Academy. I know we've got more, but we haven't got time. So
yeah,
that's the next one.
Just come to the next one. I need to tell you about this as well. It's a new networking group. It's Grapevine Network Group. It's an exciting new dedicated property networking event being held once a month from October through December, then twice a month from January. This networking group is designed to attract anybody working in the property-related companies, so anything, whether you're a builder, a tradesperson, an interior designer, an estate agent, anybody working in the property markets. And we would like each guest, where possible, it's free to start with, to bring one other property-related guest. And the next meeting is at the Marine Hotel in Whitstable, and it's at 5.30 on the 17th of October, 5.30 until 9.30, the Marine Hotel, Marine Parade, Whitstable. You can book your place by going to eventbrite.co.uk/Whitstable Grapevine Network. Okay?
Cool.
And also... 24th of October, there's a Marsh Breakfast Networking at the Ship in Dymchurch. But do you know what?
I can't believe it.
We're at the end of the show.
Apparently,
we're at the end of the show.
I can't believe it.
I want to say a huge thank you to the show sponsors, Fit for Trade, and to our fantastic guests, Paul Manfield, Ella Brocklebank, and Cheryl Causbrook. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure to hear from you. Thank you to Bird, my co-host, and we'll be back with another show next week. Do tune in to the Business Bunker Extra Show on Friday at 11 o'clock, where Amanda is joined by Gemma Fairclough-Haynes, and they're going to be talking all things HR law. That's on the Business Bunker Extra Show, 11 o'clock on Friday. We'll be back next Tuesday. Have a fantastic week, everybody, and we will see you all soon. Bye,
bye
for now.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.